Morning and happy new year. It's our first Recreation and Parks Commission meeting of the 2025 season. So welcome to our board meeting of the Recreation and Parks Commission. Today is February 6, 2025. This board meeting will be conducted in person. All public comments will be taken in person only, and each speaker will be granted a maximum 2 minutes. Our first order of business is a call for the roll. Takesha, could you please call for
Will do, Madam President. President Semra.
Present.
Vice President Sanchez.
Present.
Commissioner Hutton.
Present.
Commissioner Lloyd.
Present.
And we have quorum, Madam President.
Thank you. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from the December 19th, 2024 meeting. May I have a motion to approve these minutes? May I have a second?
Second.
Takesha, we have a motion and a second. Could you please conduct the vote?
We have a motion and a second to approve the regular minutes from December 19, 2024. Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hutton, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Semra, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. Our next witness. General comments, public comments. What is our next order of business? Our next order of business is Jimmy Kim, the general manager's update. Jimmy?
Would we want to invite the representative from, or would that, would we do that? Okay. Good morning, President Semra, commissioner, staff, and members of the public. Jimmy Kim, general manager. Before I get into my updates, I would like to bring up Kimberly Simonet, who's the principal recreation supervisor two of the Metro Region, to give an introduction of staff as well as this beautiful rec center. Thank you.
Perhaps after this presentation, we should go to Hector just to welcome the district's perspective.
Good morning, Board of Commissioners, Recreation and Parks staff, and our general public. Welcome to Chevy Chase Recreation Center. In 1978, the Department of Recreation and Parks approved the acquisition of the 2.7 acres of vacant lot of Chevy Chase Park site, also known as Atwater Multipurpose Center. It has been told by the locals that an elementary school once stood here on this land. Chevy Chase Recreation Center was built in 1981. The 10,500 square feet skate park was added in the summer of 2019. It includes banks, stairs, skate rails, and other features. Construction of the new playground for ages 2 to 5 and 5 to 12 was started in the fall of 2024. Tentative opening date is February through March of 2025, and we're really hoping that's gonna take place this month. You know, the community is really excited about the new playground. The small but mighty facility has the following features: basketball courts that are lit, children's playground that's upcoming for us, handball courts, outdoor basketball, half court lit, picnic tables and barbecue pits, small grass area, kitchen, patio, stage, multi-purpose room, after school room that's used for after school, of course, after art classes and camp. The center offers sports and fitness programs, baseball, softball, volleyball, basketball, soccer. We've got cultural programs, seasonal day camps. Our Enrich LA has air clay pottery. And I had to ask, what is air clay? But then I didn't know you'd need a kiln in order to do the clay. So we've got that here. Ukulele, play LA classes and clinics, dance, tap, ballet, squash, ultimate frisbee, skating and skateboarding, dodgeball, fitness exercise classes. We've got signature play LA programs in karate and judo. And the special events, of course, take place here annually: spring hunts, Halloween, winter, and holiday showcases. Our Chevy Chase Rec Center and Metro staff, we have Luz Perez, the Recreation Facility Director, and I believe she's in the back. Ricardo Gutierrez is the Recreation Coordinator, but I don't believe he's here this morning. Okay. Mark Gross, the Recreation Supervisor, is here. Leslie Perez isn't here, but she's our principal recreation supervisor one. Again, I'm Kimberly Simonet, Leslie Perez, and Anita Meacham, our superintendent, who is in presence today. Chevy Chase part-time staff that you probably saw today, Jessica Rios and Danny Cervantes Santos. And we have wonderful maintenance staff to make sure that we are able to maintain this wonderful facility. We've got Margarita Carrillo, Gabriela Melicor, Juan Leon, Senior Park Maintenance Supervisor, Jorge De Leora, Principal Grounds Park Maintenance Supervisor, and Javier Solis, our superintendent. Lastly, I'd like to leave you with some rap trivia. This is the 25th year of the department's Class Parks program. This year, we will celebrate our history by celebrating the 25 years of clean and safe places for our teens through adventure, education, and a lifetime of memories. Thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly, for that introduction, and thank you to the recreation, maintenance, and construction staff for inviting us here to this beautiful park. I'm going to hand it back to the President Semerol, so she could invite up the representative of CD 13.
Yeah, we have Hector Vega to give us some welcome remarks, who's a representative from Council District 13. Thank you for inviting us into your district. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning to everyone. Welcome. My name is Hector Vega. I'm with Council Members Hugo Soto Martinez. So welcome to Council District 13, Rec and Park Board, Rec and Park staff. We work with very closely and members of the public. So my name is Hector Vega. Again, I'm a representative of Council Member Hugo Soto Martinez with Council District 13. So welcome to you all, and welcome to beautiful Chevy Chase Recreation Center. We're thrilled to have you here today and would like to take a moment to extend our thanks and for hosting your meeting at one of the gems in Council District 13. I'm sorry that Councilmember Soto Martinez couldn't be here with you today. He's at his first LA Fire Recovery Commission committee meeting, and so he sends his regards, but thank you all for being here and wanted to send me here on his behalf and send along his message. Council District 13 takes great pride in the ongoing collaboration with Recreation and Parks, whether it's working together in large-scale events like the Lotus Festival, supporting park improvement projects such as those at Juntos Park and Elysian Valley Recreation Center, or partnering to address larger challenges like the removal of the fencing at Echo Park Lake. We deeply value the work we do with you and the staff at Recreation and Parks. Once again, welcome, and please don't hesitate to reach out if there's any questions or concerns that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'll go into the general manager update. As always, for special event information, I encourage the public to visit laparks.org under special events to find an event near you. For general updates, the commission office has received various communications from constituents, and we have assigned appropriate staff to follow up on those items. I would like to provide a quick update on childcare operations. We're currently shifting staff because we do have a staffing issue in terms of our part-time staff, but we're shifting some of our full-time staff over to some of the childcare centers to make sure that those centers are fully operational and extending the time of operation for those that need it. I also wanted to add that this past week, we had a very productive DEI training with our senior staff. So I wanted to extend a thank you to our Chief Equity Officer, Jennifer Perkins, for organizing that. And I wanted to say that this department remains committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion throughout our organization. Before we go into the update on the informational report regarding the 2025 wildfire recovery and response and impact report, I would like to first extend our thoughts and prayers to the community and the staff that has been affected by the wildfires. She'll be coming up in just a moment, but I did want to recognize the senior director of the Pacific Palisade, Jasmine, if you could please stand for being and joining us here today, as well as her superintendent, Sonia Young Jimenez. These two individuals have been integral in making sure that the community that were displaced have programming during the fires, during the weeks after, as well as continuing the programming. And I wanted to extend my thanks and really I want to stand and give you a round of applause because.
And Jimmy, can you, if you can, before that, I think it's important to note she was in Palisades Park during the fire. Four of her staff people were affected directly in terms of their home.
my staff and I were honored to be able to volunteer at Mar Vista the Friday after the fires, and to see what she and her team were doing to make sure there was a continuation of program despite the trauma and emotions that were running deep with the staff. Their focus and priority on the young people and making sure that they were anchored, just as a demonstration of the leadership of the RAP team, you, Jimmy, you and your leadership team, but also the dedication and commitment that under extraordinary circumstances, the love that they poured into these young people was heartwarming. So thank you.
So thank you. So at this time, I would like to bring up Gary Singer, who is the superintendent of our Emergency Management and Citywide Aquatics Division, to provide informational report regarding the 2025 wildfire impact response and recovery. I will also say that we do have handouts at the back table if you'd like to follow along, and we'll be updating our website with the informational report as well. And it's also here on the screen if you'd like to follow along. Superintendent Singer.
Good morning, Commission. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. I've been asked to present on the response to the wildfires this last month. But before I talk about the response, I want to talk a little bit about what goes into the response before it happens, and that's the preparedness aspect. The Department of Recreation and Parks has built a culture of preparedness, largely through the efforts of Jimmy, who came up through the Emergency Management Division, Brenda and Sonia, who also followed behind. But that culture of preparedness before an emergency happens helps to allow the department to respond when the emergency actually occurs. The next slide. Unlike the majority of the other departments in the city who during an emergency do what they normally do on a day-to-day basis, but they just do it in emergency mode, Recreation and Parks does something that's completely different from our day job. We are responsible for public shelter and welfare. So while on a day-to-day basis, we're doing recreational programming, when an emergency occurs, we're responsible for sheltering the public, providing facilities for large animals, other mass care operations. So that switch that has to occur takes lots of training, preparedness, plans that are in place, and exercise. So I'm very, very proud to be part of this department. I was one of the newer staff members here. It's really impressive to see how this department goes into emergency mode when the time comes. So I want to take you through a quick timeline of the events that occurred in early January. So we knew well in advance that the potential for wildfires and wind damage, the National Weather Service really sounded the alarm and said that this was going to be one of the most dangerous and potentially deadly weather events that they had seen in Southern California in a long time. So with that, the city's Emergency Operations Center activated at a low level just in preparedness and being ready for that eventuality. They were open that morning at 8 a.m. and it wasn't long before we started to hear the first reports of fires. So the Hearst fire first ignited at 10:29. And then quickly after that, we received word about the Palisades fire at 10:30. When we heard about that, we activated our Department Operations Center, which is responsible for directing field resources in an emergency. It's the one place in the department where all information flows up to allow decision makers to make sound decisions with complete information. We knew very quickly that it was going to not be over right away, that it was going to be a sustained operation. So we sent staff home in preparation for 24-hour operations. So send staff home, they rest up, and to be ready to come back later on that night. We activated our continuity of operations plan team. Now, what that team is the folks sitting next to you within the Department of Recreation Parks, general manager, executive officer, all of the AGMs, as well as folks here in the audience today. They are responsible for making policy decisions on behalf of the department, as well as continuing the day-to-day operations of the department while simultaneously conducting this emergency response mode. Because while the fires were occurring in part of the city, other areas of the city were unaffected and needed to continue programming. So the policy team was making those types of decisions and allocating resources appropriately. We started getting reports from the field, damage assessments of trees down, power outages, disruptions to communications. All of that was reported from field staff. They were also taking pictures. All of that stuff was flowing into the Department Operations Center. We were able to see that displayed on a GIS map, be able to click on icons to be able to see in real time things that were happening out in the field and dispatching field staff to take care of those issues. We were also doing park closures. So while the Palisades fire was expanding, the evacuation boundaries were also expanding, and parks that were in the evacuation zones were being contacted and evacuated appropriately. At the same time, we were activating shelters. So while those evacuations were taking place, we activated Westwood Shelter. We activated some of the facilities to house large animals that were being evacuated. So we were working closely with the American Red Cross, and we sent staff also to the Emergency Operations Center to facilitate that those discussions face-to-face across the table. Animal Services was there. So all of the public shelter and welfare activities that required cross-departmental collaboration took place at the Emergency Operations Center. We were activating Family Assistance Center. That was a location where those that were affected by the fires could go find out if their loved ones were taken to the hospital, find out where they are, if there was any resources that needed to be provided to families affected. That's where that took place. We sent out surveys to Rec and Park staff asking if they were directly impacted by the fires. We were getting that information. And with that, we activated a staff shelter over at Exposition Park at the Expo Center, and also did follow-up outreach with that staff to see if there was anything additional, any additional services that we could provide them. Those next few days, we had a large number of fires starting to ignite throughout the city. With those fires, sometimes came evacuation warnings, and we were activating evacuation centers and shelters in response. January 12th through the 17th, we opened up support camps, and Sonia Young-Jimenez, superintendent, will come up a little later and give more details about that operation. As evacuation boundaries and warnings were lifted in some of those other fires, we were demobilizing shelters. We were activating air quality relief centers in the city for areas of the city that had high smoke. And then we helped at the disaster recovery center. You may have heard about that in the news at Westwood. At UCLA Research Park, where parents and families affected by the wildfires were going to get resources all in one place. If they had children with them, those children would be able to go to a kid's corner and be looked after there while the parents were going through and receiving the resources. And then on January 24th, we assisted LAFD with sandbag fill stations because some of their fire stations were inoperable or not able to take on the public. We also did an air purifier distribution event at Hanson Dam. With a generous donation of air purifiers, we were able to get those out to the public. Today, The EOC and DOC continues response efforts. We are actively doing debris flow mitigation and recovery efforts, and an after action debrief. Those debriefs are underway so that we can improve our plans. And although we had a great response this time, there's always room for improvement. So we do those after action debriefs to improve our plans. Talk a little bit about peak operations. So at our peak in one day, we had 16 different Rec and Parks facilities activated at one time. As you can well understand, that is a very big pull on Rec and Parks resources. You can look at the list. We have shelters activated, large animal shelters, family assistance center, interim housing shelters. Those are ones in which there were assisted living facilities or things of that nature, where those centers, for example, there was a veterans RV park that had to get evacuated. All of those went to one of our rec centers. So those are the type of interim housing shelters that we helped activate. And then shower sites. So those were aquatic facilities that supported rec centers that did not have showers on site. Those pools were activated to allow the public to shower. In total, mass care operations, we had over 47 facilities throughout the course of the activation utilized for one reason or another. And it was the speed at which these shelters needed to be activated, the speed at which the staff there responded was impressive to see. As quickly as we stand them up, we're able to take them down, clean them, and get them back out and available for the public use very, very quickly. Next slide shows some of the damage at Palisades Recreation Center. At first, it was threatened, then it was safe, and then it was threatened again. And ultimately, we saw the extent of the damage. The recovery process and timeline for Palisades Rec Centers, it's going to be extensive because of the amount of damage there. But we're working closely with FEMA and Cal OES to secure that kind of funding to bring that rec center back. Also, Runyon Canyon sustained damage. And in total, there were the next slide shows the number of fire damaged parks. These are parks that had landscape damage and shrubbery, things of that nature. Response, shelter, and evacuation operations. So at peak, we had 619 residents served, 21 pets sheltered at our peak, peak large animals sheltered, 542. We had two support camps, two project camps. As of January 31st, we had 25 total operational periods. What that means is a 12-hour shift in which Department of Rec and Parks staff were at either the Department Operations Center or the EOC. We had over 600 RAP staff involved in the emergency response operations, and in total, probably upwards of 5,000 City of LA residents sheltered in total. I want to focus a little bit on the park rangers at this time. Big salute to the park rangers. Their role in emergency response is often overlooked, so I wanted to highlight them here. We had 9 rangers above and beyond what their normal duty staffing is. They helped to extinguish over 51 fires in the city, utilizing 13 vehicles. That's 2 engines, 2 water tenders, and 9 brush patrols. They arrested 7 individuals, some of those suspected of arson, and over 14 citations. You could see pictures on your slide deck of them in action. They were there with side by side with LAFD helping to fight these fires. RAP staff impacts. I talked about the survey that we sent out. We had 171 RAP staff reporting to be directly impacted, 61 reporting to have been evacuated, and 38 with property damage. So red flag warnings in parks in very high fire severity zones. So following the wildfires, the in response to city council requests and out of abundance of caution, RAP closed city parks in those very high fire severity zones during red flag warnings. We coordinate with the Emergency Management Division and city departments on report backs in response to these two city council motions related to park closures. While in this this phase where there was very bad weather, the residents in and around those parks reported that they would want to see those parks close, feel secure, make sure that no other arsonists were trying to set fires. So we, in an abundance of caution, were closing facilities and closing parks in those areas. Some acknowledgments, park rangers, the emergency management coordinators within the Emergency Management Division, working around the clock to respond to these emergencies. The Emergency Response Action Team, these are Rec and Parks employees that have other jobs in the department on a day-to-day basis, but when called upon, they drop that and they come and they respond to the emergency. Recreational Service Branch, maintenance and construction teams out there often going to areas that that could be close to the fires. Aquatics Division, the logistics staff there were tremendously helpful in getting resources to where they needed to go. Forestry Division, Park Services, executive leadership, and many more. That's it for me. Thank you very, very much. I'd like to call up Sonia Young Jimenez to give a more detailed. Go ahead.
If I could, before Sonia comes up, just a couple of questions preface my questions, just on behalf of the commission and the entire city of Los Angeles, just thank you to everyone involved in making sure we were as safe as we could. So a round of applause. I had a question with regard to the evacuation centers. So my understanding is Red Cross takes over those facilities to do the operations. I'm curious as to what is RAP staff role on those emergency management system, those evacuation centers.
Sure, thank you. So the Rec and Park staff, they're there in the middle of the night to open up the facility. They lay down tarp on the floors, for example, if this was activated as an evacuation center. Rec and Park staff come in, they lay down the tarp, make sure that the floor is protected. They make sure that all of the facility is operating optimally. So HVAC system is operating. All of the bathrooms are operating effectively. So they initially are doing facility maintenance and oversight and making sure that the facility itself is working well. When American Red Cross comes in, they take over sort of the shelter management and intake of the residents, while Rec and Park staff is continuing to do the maintenance, taking out the trash, doing that stuff. We also augment with the American Red Cross, helping them out where needed. Anything that they need, we're able to get for them.
President Simaroff, I could also add, there's one thing that we haven't mentioned in this presentation, and that is we should recognize Gary Singer. Gary is brand new to our department. It doesn't sound like it. He's a very seasoned emergency manager, and as always happens in emergency management, a literal trial by fire. So thank you, Gary, for your stoic leadership, steadfast, really providing strength and support to the team. But I'll fill in some of the gaps here with some of the other things that staff does. And I'm sorry, Brenda Geary, Assistant General Manager. So our staff Our maintenance staff is there to make sure the cleanliness of the facility is, you know, taken care of. We're taking care of, you know, restrooms that are now being used like you would in your home versus you would at your recreation center. But our recreation staff is there to fill in the gap, answer any questions that, you know, patrons will have, try to provide some comfort to them, try to make sure that the facility itself is being run in accordance with American Red Cross policies, because that's what we train to. So our recreation coordinators and directors go to an annual training so that we can stand up these facilities, and they're versed in intake, registration, shelter management. They can also do, you know, they can assign beds as needed. Essentially, anything an American Red Cross worker can do, we do as well. So wherever they need support, we're there to lend a hand. And then we're also there just to make sure the facility is presented well. It is our house, and we treat it that way. So we always want to make sure that we put our best foot forward or making everybody as comfortable as possible, even if it's just adding some decorations or bringing some coloring books out for kids that we see. We just want to make everybody as comfortable as possible. And we're also guardians for them. So we try to make sure that, you know, we're protecting their privacy while they're at the site. You know, sometimes you get some people that try to come in, take videos, that sort of thing. So, you know, we're making sure we're taking care of all of that, and really providing a good home for all of our clients that are there until the day that they leave. And we also communicate directly any needs that we see, irrespective of whether or not American Red Cross is asking for this. Our staff can communicate directly to the Department Operations Center and say, you know, we might need a shower chair. We actually only have one and it's insufficient. So it's constant communication back and forth. And translation services sometimes are other things that we need that we can, you know, let the DOC know and get a translator out there. So that's just a handful of the things that we do, you know, in addition to all the things that Gary's already mentioned.
Yeah, that's very helpful, Brenda. Thank you. So did we do that for the evacuation centers? Did we do that with existing staff, or do we have to augment staff to support the emergency operations?
So it's both. We'll take, you know, once we take over a center, whoever center that is automatically assigned usually to the event, but we do have to bring augmented staff because it is a 24-hour operation. And at times, depending on the population, which at Westwood, I believe that we at peak, we might've hit 270. So that definitely needs a lot more staff. Even on the maintenance side, we had to double the amount of staff that we had.
Yeah, that's what I was, you know, because I think there's a perception that we just open up and give the space, but that there is staff support of existing staff and then augmented staff. So I appreciate you clarifying that. Similar question in terms of, I noticed with the updates, a large number of livestock and animals that were evacuated. Can you just share a little bit about the support, staff support, where the evacuation centers were for the animals, and maybe just an update of where the numbers are currently, because I think that's a little longer term lead in terms of returning those animals back to their.
Absolutely. I am currently, we still have 120 animals at the Los Angeles Equestrian Center. We had at one time both Hanson Dam Horse Park, which is a concession, and the LAEC, which is the operating agreement. So we had both of them activated for that total comprehensive amount that Gary had told us, which is, I think, 548 altogether. At some point, we condensed. That operation is led by Animal Services and supplemented through each of the staff at the location. So at the LAEC, we had Joe Solisis, in addition to the LAEC team there assisting, and we had a large contingency of volunteers that showed up and really made a community feel there. They got a lot of donations from various, you know, organizations, and Animal Services had four staff there on a 24-hour basis to ensure that the animals had everything that they needed. And if a veterinarian or somebody was needed, they can call for that. But in terms of what our department does, if Animal Services doesn't have adequate staff or we don't have enough volunteers, then we would send staff to help to support whatever operations there are that we can do within our limits. You know, obviously we're not going to go out and exercise a horse, but, you know, we can muck a stall, you know, something to that effect.
Thank you. And then my last question, Gary, you mentioned the after action debrief. I'm curious as to how that debrief is disseminated to the staff, the city council, so that everyone's aware of the process that we took on emergency operations, and then any learnings from that to be much better. Not that we weren't prepared in this case, but just to that feedback loop. How is that debrief report shared more broadly throughout the department?
So we're actually in the process of conducting or putting together a scope of work to have a request for proposals for somebody outside of the department to come in and look at our operations and give us a third party perspective on our response, take a look, interview staff, and get that feedback, put that in an after action report. Once that after action report is reviewed, we could submit it to City Council for filing. But usually how those after action debriefings go is you individually get groups of folks and you ask them to identify areas for improvement. What went wrong during the emergency? And more importantly, what can we do next time to improve it or to fix it? No matter how great a response is, you're always going to find those ways to improve. So you conduct those meetings. You can do them in person. You can do them virtually. And you could also collect staff feedback in surveys and forms. That information is collected and then put into a report. And we try to look at our processes, not necessarily look at individuals, but look at the processes and see how you can improve those. All of those get written into our plans, and then the cycle continues. So you exercise the plans, whether it's a real world emergency or an exercise, you get those, you write them into the plan, and then the cycle continues. But I want to circle back on something that Brenda had said about augmenting. We augmented Rec and Park staff. But American Red Cross at one point during this emergency, if we were to have to activate one more shelter, they would not have had any more local American Red Cross staff to fill that shelter, at which point it would be 100% Rec and Park staff that would be running and operating that shelter. Luckily, they activated their national teams and were flying in American Red Cross volunteers from throughout the country, and they were able to augment their own staffing that way. But the City of Los Angeles Rec and Parks is the gold standard for understanding that responsibility falls on our shoulders. Other cities throughout the operational area rely 100% on American Red Cross to run and operate their shelters. And if the American Red Cross isn't there for them, they don't have a plan. American Red Cross looks to the City of LA, even when things aren't in our city, they ask us to activate our shelters because they know our operation and they know how quickly we can respond in the event of emergency. So another example of how Rec and Parks is the gold standard in emergency response for sheltering in Southern California. Very, very proud of that.
No, thank you. We should be proud of that, all of us. And my apologies, one last question. So I'm making note of the staff operations, and then there was damage, both landscaping trees and facilities damages. I understand the facilities, there'll be, you know, insurance and FEMA, you know, whatever the state and local support is for that. My question is what is the budget implications to staffing for the emergency? And then budget implications for trees and things that might not be covered. Can you just share a little bit about that? And I don't know if that, Gary, if that's you, and I'm looking at Matthew, who might answer, or Noel.
Thank you. Good questions, because the emergencies cost a lot of money. Right now we are working, and probably will come to the board at the next meeting with some recommendations on covering costs that were incurred operating the center. Then Kathy and I are working on the two major projects that will go forward to FEMA. You can always correct me if I'm wrong. That will be the Palisades Center and damage that was George Wilford or Terrell Canyon Park. Some of the other FEMA doesn't normally have this discussion for land.
So the Runyon Canyon trails.
They will be putting in, requests. As you know, it doesn't happen overnight. So, right now.
So if I could summarize on that, the estimate right now, and it's a huge number, it's about $50 million, and that's really a 5-0. It's really a thumb estimate. And the main components of that is three structures at Palisades Recreation Center. It's the main recreation center, the newer building that was completed roughly in 2000. And then there were two smaller buildings, the tennis center and the maintenance service building. And those were all, the two smaller buildings were total loss. The main building, we're currently working with our planning team and with Bureau of Engineering to assess the remainder of the structure. Going back to the question of FEMA and FEMA reimbursement, we've met on site with FEMA representatives, and you know the typical language is that if it was to rebuild to what was pre-existing, whatever was there and whatever burnt, if we built it to the exact, there is possible funding and reimbursement coming from FEMA OES. So I guess lucky that this particular facility is new, unlucky that other structures, we do not have the documentation. So along those lines, we can certainly show lots of photographs, lots of recent plans of what was there and what was damaged. So we're very hopeful with that. We're testing what remains of the building to see if a portion of the building can be salvaged from a structural standpoint. Going back to the question of engineered versus not engineered, the two comparison right now is Potrero Canyon, George Wilford Park. That is completely engineered in the sense that over the last 40 years, that was a canyon that suffered quite a bit of landslides. I guess 40 years ago, there were actually properties that fell into the canyon that was purchased by the city. And then Bureau of Engineering's geotechnical group reconstructed that hillside to stabilize it. That I basically have submitted information to argue that the landscaping that's there is helping prevent any additional deterioration to that slope. And if you had the opportunity to walk through, the trails are engineered trails. They're not trails that were naturally occurring. The opposite on Runyon is that Runyon is a natural hillside. It's all of the planting that is there. It's not something that our landscape architects designed. So that it's certainly an argument that it needs some level of work, some level of assistance in certain areas. But I know the initial response that I received from FEMA is it's a natural area and it would naturally recover. It wasn't something that we had designed and irrigated.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I appreciate the details on that. My day job is, the engagement of sport, play, and movement for our physical and mental well-being in any normal circumstances, and certainly those impacted by the fires directly, tangentially. I know Commissioner Hutton and I live in the Studio City area, and the Sunset fires and the Sunset fires were a bit far too close, and just that, emotional and mental trauma. Our parks and recreation and open space and trails are more critical now than they ever have been, so that we can offer and afford those spaces where families, I know that there's some in Palisades wanting the tennis courts to open because that is, the place where they breathe, where they congregate, where they get a sense of belonging. And I appreciate the comment on FEMA and what we might be able to recover there. But it sounds as if, as we go into this budget cycle, there is repairs to our open space that was damaged that is going to be critical to the mental and emotional recovery of our city. And so it would be helpful to understand what are those budget implications and how, we can articulate to the city council as we go through the budget process, the importance of making sure the department is funded to be able to restore those spaces.
And Commissioner Sirmo, if I could just add to Kathy's response, Matthew Rudnick, Executive Officer. So FEMA does provide reimbursement, but again, the city has to front fund and get reimbursed. So to your point, the city council will need to identify funding sources for the rebuilding effort at the parks and the facilities that do need to be repaired and renovated. Also to your question about staffing costs, FEMA will reimburse overtime or those costs that are above and beyond our normal staffing levels. So as Gary mentioned, a lot of the enhanced and augmented staff for sheltering, all of that is tracked. We have payroll codes, so every cost is tracked during an emergency, but there will be a need for the city council to engage with Rec and Parks to make sure we get our fair share back. That does take time. So we'll be coming back to the board with updates on that process on the go forward.
Thank you.
And again, just real quick, so there's sort of a gap funding.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we don't ever give up. We always keep at it.
No, appreciate that. Before we go into the support camps, just to my commissioners, if there was any additional question.
I have some questions around our rangers, and this probably speaks more to my ignorance about their scope of work. But so the vehicles, do we own these engines, and is kind of brush maintenance and patrol part of their regular duties?
Yes. So we do own fire trucks and some water tenders. Additionally, we also train with the Los Angeles Fire Department for our wildland fire management. So even in blue sky days where, you know, we're not under any type of threat, you know, our people are out there, they're training with the apparatus. And then when there's red flag days, not just in this severity, but just in general, our Park Ranger Division also assigns units to do fire watch throughout those parks that lie within the very high fire hazard severity zone. Sorry, that acronym is really difficult.
And we might get into this in our one of our board reports, but brush management, does that fall under our department and the Rangers or LAFD?
I'll defer to Kathy on that question. It actually goes in, I think, with our maintenance.
So under our maintenance division, we have a section that oversees brush clearance. So annually, we have a set budget for about 200 locations citywide. These are locations identified with the fire department. And in a very brief description, if there is brush located within about 200 feet of a structure, we are subject to go ahead and do brush clearance on those sites. So we facilitate this work through our construction contracts. The limitation for that is just basically our in-house staffing and some of the terrain being hillside. So given that it's contracted work, we bid that work annually. We're getting ready right about now, actually. And this is work that will be implemented in May, June of this year.
Any other questions? Okay, great. Gary, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to your team for everything you've done.
All right. Good morning, commissioners, executive team, and community members. My name is Sonia Young Jimenez, and I'm the superintendent over the West Region. I know I just wanted to thank the ERAT team, as well as Gary and our emergency managers. It's like a proud mama moment because I used to be an EM alongside Jimmy and Brenda, and to see them flourish and activate so quickly, it's really impressive. So support camps. So as the superintendent, the West has gone through a lot this last month. We had to evacuate four of our facilities, and you guys seen the devastation that happened at Palisades. So we quickly came into effect. I know you guys thanked Jasmine, but Jasmine really created a great community up in Palisades. Everyone was calling her. The day of the fire, I was like, why are you still there? You need to leave. She was still up there taking photos. But she really created this community way before the fire, and it only got stronger afterwards. So we opened up two support camps in the West at Mar Vista and Oakwood Recreation Center. You can see our very own Simrel in the next slide, visiting with LA 84. We had so many requests for assistance, we were overwhelmed. So it was 2 weeks of people just calling, like, how can we help? What can we do? So from January 13th through the 31st, we basically opened up camp. We were there all day. We had staff come from different centers. Since four of our facilities were evacuated, we had that staff to help as well do the support camps. Most of our youth were from 5 to 8 years old, but we opened it up all the way up to 17. We provided breakfast, lunch, and snacks. At the height of our registration, we had 61 kids registered at Oakwood Recreation Center and 170 at Mar Vista. We also had Project Care Camps, which is another organization that opened up camps at Eagle Rock and at Palms. At their height, I believe they had 50 at Eagle Rock and 9 at Palms. This is kind of a little afterwards, but Eagle Rock was affected by the Altadena fire. They're a great organization. I worked with them in the past when I was emergency manager, and their whole goal for their camps is to come in during times of emergency or crisis and assist the families. So they also had their own camps. At Mar Vista and Oakwood, we planned, like we would any summer camp, what we do every year, field trips, activities. This was like camp on steroids. So they had something pretty much every hour someone was here. But we included trips to the California Science Center, the IMAX, Scooter's Jungle, and John's Incredible Pizza. And parents were so grateful to have this opportunity to take a breath, to be able to get all these calls done. Majority of our families, and I think Jasmine knows more, but more than half of the families lost homes or the kids that were in this camp. So as soon as they were coming in the door, they were just crying, telling their story. People were connecting. It was a really nice opportunity for them to go and leave the kids and go get stuff done and call insurance and do all the things they needed to do. And the kids to have a sense of normalcy and be with their friends and just be there for a while and not think about this. Some of the community support, and I hope I got everyone because there's a lot of people, but the Los Angeles Public Library called in. They had some of their authors come in and actually read their books to the children and give them the books, which was really cool. So the kids got to meet authors and sit there with them. The Natural History Museum delivered their interactive underwater program, and then they learned about LA's marine past. The Discovery Science Center provided a portable planetarium demonstration, and the LA Zoo brought in hands-on exhibits for the kids to touch and talk with the zoo group. Other partners, we partnered up with the Theater Visual Arts Centers, so the Center Theater Group, the Heart of LA, the LA Phil, and the Music Center. And this collaboration was so great. They took the bull by the horns. They started inputting hours, talking to all their teams. They also brought STEM. So we had the LA STEM Collective come in, Two-Bit Circus, The Science, Friends of the LA River, Roundhouse Aquarium. And then we did some sensory play and creative expression. So best bubble parties, epic fun, paint on your face, donated by LA 84 Foundation. So there's just some pictures of the kids really enjoying themselves and taking them out of all the chaos for a little while. As they said, we continue to do drop-in programs. So we did the 3 weeks and we kind of surveyed the parents to see if they still needed the whole day. A lot of them said they were okay. Most kids had gone back to school. We do have about 20 kids who are from one of the schools that was burnt completely down, and they're still coming to the drop-in. So basically like an after-school program, they're able to come and just do activities and help out with homework and stuff like that. I wanted to give a special thanks, like I said, to Jasmine, all the great work, her and her staff. Actually, five of her staff, including our coordinator, lost their homes in the fire. So it was very hard for them, but they liked to be active and doing something. It kind of got their minds off of everything that was happening. Jasmine continues to be holding, right now she has 77 basketball teams playing, and they're still playing to this day at just different parks throughout the city. So they're still coming together. All the Oakwood staff and the Mar Vista staff are letting us take over their facilities. Our West Region management team, I couldn't do it without them. Ramon, Juan, Courtley, and Melody. We have a great team in the West. And our maintenance team, like always, our support. The LA Parks, LA Department of County Parks and Recs, they've been a great team. They did their own care camps, and we followed suit, and we worked together. So we've been working really great with that organization. All of our scheduling of all the activities, we all did it together. So really thanks to LA Parks County, the County of LA. And the Department of Mental Health came in and did some healing circles with the kids, talked to the kids and the families, whoever wanted to sit in. So thank you to the Department of Mental Health. And if you see here, just all the different logos of the groups that helped. We had to turn some people away at the end because there was no more time to add more groups. And Jasmine came up with the last little logo. It's the logo they've been doing all over their website, but Palisades Rec, or Pali Rec, Resilience, Strength, and Unity. Thank you.
Love it. Thank you guys so much. Two quick comments. One, the photograph of me at Mar Vista Park, the LA Zoo was there that day, mm-hmm. and they were showing a skin of a bobcat. And so the kids were like, touching the bobcat or whatever. And I happened to have a photograph, a video of a bobcat that was in my backyard. And so I was actually showing the kids the bobcat. And then the staff was like, wow, I've never seen a bobcat live. So yeah. I'm surprised you. Yeah, it was that photo. So that was really cute. And then the second is just a thank you, because I make note of the way in which Jasmine, your team, is communicating with the parents. I happen to be at the emergency center at the old mall on Pico, uh-huh. and just volunteering and talking with some folks, and a parent from Palisades, I think his daughter was 12 years old, and we got a conversation about her basketball program and how he got a text saying that the program was going to continue, and I think it was at Mar Vista Park, and how grateful he was for the quick communication, but also the fact that the programming was going to continue for a basketball program, for what has been said about that sense of normalcy, about that sense of support. So I just wanted to share that with you and the team and say thank you, and kudos to everyone for responding in such a loving way.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Jasmine, she got calls and some of the parents were like, our kids asked about the rec center before they asked about our house. So she was like, they really want to come back. And so many of the coaches, we thought we weren't going to get a lot of kids come back. I think a handful of people couldn't come back for some reason, but almost the whole, all the teams that had signed up returned and are playing. We also have JJ Redick as one of our coaches, and he, all over social media, talked about how he really got the home in Palisades because of the rec center, because of the community feel it had there. So I really attest that to Jasmine and her team.
And I think that's we need to take our cue from that and make sure we're prioritizing a rebuild of Palisades Park as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sonia and Gary, for the presentation. And I would also like to add on that we will be coming back to the board very, very soon in the very near future, maybe in two meetings to kind of provide an update of kind of the strategy as we rebuild and support Pacific Palisades. And finally, I did want to mention as we close up the emergency operations that to Gary's point, this department has a culture of preparedness. And we understand that if a disaster were to occur geographically in a large geographic area, this department will be responsible for supporting mass care and sheltering operations. And we take that very seriously. And so I just wanted everybody in the public to know that we prepare regularly, and that if the call comes, all of our employees sign a oath of loyalty, and you saw that during COVID. We see that at all of our local emergencies and really front and center for the wildfires. So I did want to mention that this department stands united with the city and the mayor to support not only those affected by the fires, but also citywide. So I wanted to close the report on that note. And now I wanted to hand over my update to Matthew Rudnick, who's going to give us an update on the Rancho Park Clubhouse updates.
Again, good morning, commissioners, members of the public, Rec and Park staff, Matthew Rudnick, executive officer. Per the board's request and a request for an update by members of the public, we wanted to give just a brief update on the Rancho Park Golf Clubhouse and Restaurant. As you are aware, it was in the process of being renovated, and we were the concessionaire that we have a contract with communicated that they're unable to retain the financing needed to proceed with that project. So we wanted to give an update. We have some work ahead on that project, but want to give frequent updates to the board as well as the public on the effort. So staff is currently working with our incumbent concessionaire on a settlement agreement to cooperatively terminate the current concessions contract, thereby reverting the control of the clubhouse and premises back to the department. Clearance from the Department of Building and State Safety is still required before the renovation can resume under the department's control. So Rec and Parks is working to retain an architect to modify and finalize our construction plans, obtain building and safety approval, and then be able to be available during the construction phase of the project. We plan to utilize a pre-qualified on-call contractor, which will be much more expeditious than the issuance of a standalone RFP for the construction process. We are onboarding a new RAP staff project manager to oversee the architect, the on-call bid and award process, and the renovation project as well. In parallel to the renovation project work, our RAP concessions unit is developing a new RFP for the operation of the restaurant and halfway house in an effort to retain a long-term food and beverage operator for this facility prior to the renovation project being completed. So those two efforts are going to happen kind of in tandem as a time savings measure. I wanted to mention that we'll be coming back to the board to allocate initial funding for the project. Funding for the project is available in our golf capital improvement account. And we'll also be coming back to the board with regular updates on the renovation project and updates on the RFP process for the food and beverage operation. I did want to report that we met on Tuesday of this week with the Rancho Golf Course Clubhouse Liaison Group, which was convened by Council District 5 and made up of representatives of the neighborhood council, the golf club, and community stakeholders. We're going to be meeting with that group every 2 to 3 weeks to provide regular progress updates so that we're transparently going over our progress on the project. That just provides a high level. We'll also be coming back to the board and to the liaison group with a much more definitive timeline. Right now we have a good sense of our next steps, but there are some things we have to work out legally with the current contractor and really get a definitive timeline for building and safety on the finalization of approval for the plans. But we'll be coming back to the board with more updates. That concludes my report.
Thanks both to Matt and to Jimmy. Are there any questions or comments?
I had two, and apologies if I missed it. Are we using the same architect, or did we figure that out, or do we have to go and find a new architect? And then for the concession, are we going to have this person maintain the concession only?
Sure. Good questions. A determination of utilizing the current architect of record has not been made, but whether we use them or we use an on-call architect that we already have, that our on-call architect can essentially work with the architect of record at the same time. And then your second question.
So it's not going to slow us down, I guess, is my point. Great.
Correct. We're doing everything to shorten each phase, recognizing the urgency. There's clearly frustration, rightly so, of the delay. And so we're doing everything we can to really focus on. There are even some things in construction we think we might be able to phase to really get some of the amenities in the clubhouse open in a phased way as well. But we'll be coming back to talk about that. I'm apologies. Your second question? So currently is currently providing food and beverage, temporary food and beverage, and halfway house operation. We'll be doing an RFP for the long term. That incumbent concessionaire can bid, but we are going to be open up to other restaurateurs.
Thank you both.
Yep, and I just wanted to say that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gary, Sonia, Matt, and Jimmy. Thank you. That was a really helpful presentation and report. And with that, we're going to move on to general public comment. Takesha, would you please conduct general public comment?
Will do, Madam President. I will call the first three constituents to come up to the podium and make a public comment. You will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes. And if you have further comments, you may send them to our RAP inbox at rap.commissioners@lacity.org. And I'm going to have Jay Jacoby, Karen, and Dave Versal.
So good morning, everybody. Matt said it very well. We had a meeting a couple days ago. I think that coming away from that meeting, and you know, we have Vanessa Saldana, who's the field deputy, who answers to the councilwoman, three people on the board of the Rancho Park, including the president of the Rancho Park Golf Club, guy from the SCGA, and you know, I just want to let you know that from that meeting, probably the first hint of optimism and enthusiasm that Matt provided us, because I think that we really realize now that everybody's sort of on board. We're going to keep, you know, we're looking to help this process. We're not, you know, we're a liaison reporting just so that people know what's going on and that things are progressing. So We owe you a real debt of gratitude for coming, and I'll be calling him every other day to check in. No, I'm just kidding. And really, that was, you know, I mean, that was really the sense of it. We're waiting for Matt to come back with a few things. We are going to do it every 2 or 3 weeks just to keep up. You know, it can be an hour, which is what it was, and it could be 15 minutes. So just, we just want to keep the communication flow to our constituents, to everybody, you know, all the people that I just mentioned, you know, hear it just as quickly as our constituents. So, you know, we'll be proud of that, and we'll hope to get this thing done quickly. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your time.
Morning, commissioners. Can you hear me? Okay. So first of all, I'd like to thank the Griffith Park Rangers and our LAPD Northeast Division for quickly responding to an arson fire by a transient that was drawn to the area back on January 20th. They apprehended the individual and they were in custody, and I believe they were cited and let out. But regardless, the LAPD and our Rangers did a fabulous job at making sure that the fire did not spread in the park. The second thing I'd like to talk about is the Bridge Home Shelter. I have forwarded letters to the Rec and Parks Commission as an analysis of the CAO report and the presentation, the brief, very brief presentation given by Council District 4, Patrick Siggins. In his verbal rendition of what the ambassador program is, it differs from very much from what the community has been told that it would be. And it does not provide an added level of security around the shelter. So I would urge the Rec and Parks Commission to actually get in writing from Council District 4 what exactly is the ambassador program, because between what the council office tells the community and what the council office is telling you, there's a huge disconnect. The other thing that I would like to mention is that I believe that we should consider agendizing the Griffith Park Adult Community Center. There is not been much movement in over a year, but as I remember, it was the end of February 2024 when Councilwoman Rahman had said that she and her staff were working toward the South Griffith Park Master Plan, and so far there's been no inroads made on that whatsoever. So
thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Dave Verso, and I returned to ask for your help. Like most people, you're likely unaware that there's decades of research that explains why our youth sports programs unnecessarily limit enjoyment, undermine self-confidence, and prevent achievement. To be clear, the once inconsequential decisions to make teams as even as possible, even if I'm making the children within those teams as uneven as possible, was made long ago. Society has changed, and our policies have not changed with it. The LA 84-2024 Play Equity Report noted that just 1 in 4 children had regular physical activity unless they were in an adult organized program. Yet most children are dropping out of youth sports by age 11. The LA 84 report stated 2/3 of parents say they struggled with their sports participation costs. Yet many pay 100 to 1,000 times more for programs that aren't subject to our current policies. But there is a proven solution available, and it's based on development. Since I'm limited to just 2 minutes to speak, I prepared 4 documents for each of you. The first is an email to me from the president emeritus of a well-known national university and renowned scholar has helped advance our understanding of human development. In it, the former president states, first, I think your approach is desperately needed. The second document is an introduction to a book I'm writing that he was kind enough to review. It explains what I'm describing to you and why it's important. The third document contains a short slideshow of the contents of the book. And the final document explains.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Where can I leave these documents?
The last constituent is Zoe Lilly.
Thank you to the Recs and Parks Commission for giving me the opportunity to speak today and to Chevy Chase for hosting the meeting. My name is Zoe Verkylen Bliley, and I'm here with fellow community and PAB member Carlo Passos Adelson. I've lived in Atwater Village for 14 years and have been a member of the Parks Advisory Board of Chevy Chase and North Atwater Park since 2018. My 9 and 5-year-old children have been using this facility and programming as soon as they were old enough to enroll. Our PAB helped build and open the skate park in 2019, and we're so grateful to be opening the new playground, which is set to open hopefully next week. I have 3 things that I would like to address with you to hope that we can have further conversations and planning on all. The first is our facilities bathrooms, which are too small, old, unsafe, and not ADA compatible. With the increase in enrollment here, there is not enough space to accommodate the needs of people. Specifically, the outdoor bathrooms, there's just one stall. Kids are afraid to use them. They don't have adequate lighting. They are outdated. And most importantly, they're not ADA compatible, which is extremely concerning for our community members who are wheelchair users. Not being ADA compatible is illegal, and I would hope this could be a priority. The second is the graffiti on the upper windows. How can we replace the windows without losing the light, natural light that it brings in the facility? And how can we actively combat the graffiti issue with the local gang activity? Lastly, we would like to discuss how to remove the outdoor cement stage and enclose the patio through those doors over there so we can utilize that space for more programming. If the patio is enclosed, it would allow for more programming to be offered as it would give the facility another room. There is a high demand for programming in the community, as you can see by the large increase in our enrollment numbers. If the patio is enclosed, we could do karate and art and dance classes in there while other programming can happen in the gym that's more appropriate on a court environment.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, I do not have any further requests for general public comment.
Thank you. Seeing none, let's move on to public comment on board-specific items.
Madam President, I did not receive any requests for public comment on board.
Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to our board reports. And with the consent of my fellow commissioners, I'd like to take the following items on consent. Item 001. 002, 003, 004, 006, 007, 008, 009, 010, 011, 013, 015, 016, and 017. Give a moment to track all of those. Do I have a motion to take these items on consent?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Takesha, I have a motion and a second to take those items on consent. Can you call for the vote, please?
Will do, Madam President. We have a motion and a second to take the following board reports on consent. 25001, 25002, 25003, 25004, 25006, 25007, 25008, 25009, 25010, 25011, 25013, 25015, 25016, and 25017. Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hudson, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Simrell, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. And with that, we'll take our first board report, item 005. Daryl, how are you, my friend?
Good morning, commissioners, and I am well.
Good.
Everyone's doing okay this morning. Okay. Report 25005. In regards to the Urban Forestry Manual, this report is recommending that the board approve the adoption of the updated Urban Forestry Manual. So just as some background and context, as noted, back in 2003, this board originally approved our first tree preservation urban tree program. That was our essentially our first manual, which a part of it was, in fact, these urban tree guidelines developed. So this policy was later amended by the board to clarify certain issues regarding jurisdiction over the removal of trees. And that was done in the context of some issues that ran up around a project, actually a shelter project we were doing. But again, some clarifications there. But ultimately, what's before the board today is a comprehensive rewrite of the urban forestry program guideline in the new urban forestry manual. I must make sure to note, as noted in the report, this would not have been possible without a grant from CAL FIRE. It also would not have been possible without the department and our staff's judicious use of the CAL FIRE funds, because the report notes what originally we received the CAL FIRE money for, but through savings that we accrued from that, we were able to go back to them and ask them if we could use the savings to do this urban forestry manual, which again has been something that has been on staff's queue and desire to do for quite some time. So just to be very brief on it, again, as I noted before, this is an update of our urban forestry program. If you had an opportunity to review the manual, you'll see it goes through some of the guidelines for our forestry department to follow, talks about the trees, their care, their species. Noted in the report are some of the key updates to the manual, which also particularly talking about making sure our preservation guidelines are in there, making sure the policies that we follow in our projects to protect our urban forestry and our trees are clarified and have been updated. And again, the manual also incorporates those updates, the procedural updates that we had from the previous manual to make sure it's clear that this board is the body that has the authority to approve or disapprove the removal of protected trees and species of that. So again, the report is recommending that the board approve this updated manual, and our staff from our maintenance section and forestry are here today if you have any specific questions about the manual. But while my voice may not convey it, we are very excited to have this item before the board. It's been a long time coming, and this updated manual we think will be a great resource, not only for our department, but for other partners who work in the urban forestry sphere, just to see that we're really trying to put our face forward and our foot forward in the most updated way we can and have our procedures out there.
Thank you for that. Questions from the commissioners?
I have two. The board or the report notes that LADWP prunes and maintains, brush and trees around their facilities. When are we informed? Like, what's the process for them? Do they tell us when they're coming in to do it? Does LAFD tell them what to do? I just want to know a little bit more about that.
Yes, yeah, so maybe I'll ask Leon to come up and talk a little bit about some of our coordination with that. But Commissioner, you've highlighted something that's very important, which is that across our property, we have a lot of partners and a lot of adjacent agencies. There's a lot of coordination in the sphere of looking at who's maintaining our trees and who's on or through our property to do it. But I'll let Leon provide some commentary.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Leon Bordiski. I'm the principal forester for the Department of Recreation and Parks. Can you repeat the question, please?
So in the kind of brush and pruning section of the manual, it talks about how we have a relationship with other people who come in and do certain street services, maintains the trees on streetways and not in parks, et cetera, et cetera. And so it mentions how LADWP is responsible for the management of trees and brush around their, power facilities and things like that. So I'm just curious, do they follow our rules? Are they informed by LAFD what to do when they come and do their, are we telling them when to come in? Is this something that they do frequently?
They do it annually. They're required by actual federal regulation to keep a certain clearance from the high voltage wires. So they're not following our policies. They're following federal guidelines to maintain a safe distance from high voltage wires, so we don't have events like we've had recently with wildfires.
Yeah. Is there a mechanism that we have, if we notice they're not maintaining it, that we can say, hey, get out here if an annual sort of thing is not enough?
We work in cooperation with DWP. So if there's an example that we need to work on a tree that we're not qualified to work on that's in proximity to high voltage wires, we call them out. And they'll come out and clear the wires to make it safe for us to do additional work, or they'll do all the work that's necessary on that tree, and we may pick up the brush. So we have a good working relationship, and we're in good communication with DWP.
My second question is around water restrictions during the drought. And specifically, I think it's page 31. It talks about watering practices and how we've been restricted in the past because of city, county, or state regulations around that. I guess, what is the recommendation for us as a commission and the department on order to fight to stop some of those restrictions, understanding that water restrictions are in place because of drought, but the, you know, the healthier trees we have can both help us long-term for drought issues. So I guess, you know, you point it out, but what are we going to do about it is my question.
That's a good question. I might refer to Kathy a little bit on that one. We do have some options, but I'll let you speak to that.
That's a very good question, Commissioner. Kathy Santo Domingo, Assistant General Manager, Planning, Maintenance, and Construction. This last two fiscal cycles, we actually are not under a restriction in terms of water conservation. But that said, you know, the prior 10 years or so, on a regular basis, we have restrictions to have water reduction, and it's, you know, up to 10% annually. There are many steps that the department has taken. As you've seen, like over the last 10 years, there's actually quite a bit more drought tolerant plants. There's actually areas where we have gone ahead and been proactive to remove turf, and where possible, it's really reduction of certain planting. And that's for the department to be able to focus our water usage on the actual recreation centers, and also for planting that we do think would be valuable, such as the trees and whatnot. Another big step that the department took is really focusing some reduction. And I know it's a conversation right now, and it's with regards to artificial turf. So quite a bit of the measures over the last 10 years is to really convert our field of play, our soccer fields. And we can come back with a report on the statistics of, you know, the water reduction that was basically benefited the department. Currently, the department is working with City Council and other departments to study artificial turf. You know, there's been quite a few questions along the way, and there were some specifications early on in terms of the type of synthetic fields. So the department has pivoted to address all of those items. Early on, crumb rubber was a question. We don't use crumb rubber on our synthetic fields. We actually use a natural product called zeolite. So with that, there's quite a bit of efforts in the department to reduce water usage by utilizing other means. And some of those cost savings are basically shifted to where we can benefit, such as, you know, watering certain planting and benefiting for our trees. We have a section within our planning group that interacts with Water and Power's group, and we basically meet with them on a regular basis in terms of guidelines and other items that can be utilized. Water and Power has also helped us fund some of these water reduction projects over the last 10 years.
May I add one thing on that? In conjunction with this manual, our city forest officer is also working on a citywide urban forestry management plan, and she is addressing some of the water usage issues that she'll bring to that manual that'll go in front of the city council.
Commissioner Lloyd, if I could just add one more thing, because it goes to the point of the manual, but just as Kathy mentioned, we have had a reprieve in the last couple years because of the really wet winter we received a couple years ago. Before that, though, we were in an emergency water conservation kind of posture. There is an ordinance that establishes mandatory water reduction for city departments. Because it's mandatory, it put us in a challenging position with respect to the health of our trees and other natural areas. And so there's an alternative means of compliance section in that ordinance that we actually exercised and went through with DWP, where we established water savings targets on a like kind of regional basis for our parkland. And we're able to more strategically water where we need to water while meeting an overall water conservation target. We've given climate and where we're headed in the next few years, we imagine this will come up again. And so we'll be happy to report back on the to the board on, you know, when we enter into that water conservation kind of ordinance phase. I also just wanted to mention the team, Daryl's team, is continue to work closely with LA Sanitation and DWP on stormwater capture projects in parks, because to the extent we can, we are capturing rainwater for the use of irrigating and percolation back into the groundwater. So wanted to just mention that as well.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Any other questions on this side?
Just one observation. I think it's a fantastic, we were just talking, it's a fantastic manual that's not just great for city staff and our staff in guiding how they manage our properties, but also for us as residents. And I'd hope we amplify it through our channels, and we also make it available to our nonprofit partners that manage lands abutting and around the city. We've got a lot that do, and making sure that when we get an investment like that, a grant, that we're able to leverage that to its greatest extent. So thank you. It's a fantastic name.
Yeah, thank you for that, Commissioner Hutton. And it just, you know, causes to my mind, I'm now knowing what a defendable space is just with the recent fires, is I do think that there's an opportunity, and maybe coordinating with our communication department, to actually bring some visibility and some noise around this manual, and some highlights of what we all need to be mindful of, given the climate situation that we're in and the potentials for more devastating fires. So kudos to you and your team, the ingenuity and reprogramming dollars, and for getting this to the commission for approval. It couldn't be more timely. So thank you.
And Commissioner Simrell, I do want to just recognize Leon's leadership in our forestry division. Not only do they do our regular day-to-day, they are understaffed. This is a budget priority we have to rebuild that division, but also their work during this month, given the windstorms, given the fires, has been extraordinary. So we just want to lift up our forestry division and Leon's leadership as well.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So our next item is item 12.
Good morning. Melissa Bettis, Partnership Section. Board Report 25-012 requests the board's approval of a proposed field improvement project at North Hollywood Recreation Center and a proposed gift agreement accepting the field improvements as a donation from the Oakwood School, an independent day school near the Recreation Center. The improvements include the renovation of one baseball field, one softball field, and one multi-sport field, the installation of new batting cages, dugout modifications, and irrigation improvements. The project area will be enclosed with new fencing that will have both vehicle and pedestrian access points. The Oakwood School will also be improving a small baseball field adjacent to the project area for RAP's primary use. An 18-by-24-inch metal sign that conforms to the RAP sponsorship recognition policy recognizing this donation is also included. The project plans have been reviewed and approved by the Planning, Maintenance, and Construction Branch and are on file in the board office. The proposed field improvement project is valued at approximately $2 million. This board report also requests the approval of a license and maintenance agreement that with the Oakwood School for an initial term of 5 years, with the option to renew for an additional 5 years. As part of the donation, the Oakwood School has agreed to contract with a licensed landscape company and fund the maintenance of the fenced project area once completed. The value of the field maintenance is approximately $75,000 per year. In consideration of the investment being made by the school to improve and maintain the fields, staff recommends that field use permits be suspended for the initial 5-year term of this agreement, since the value of the donated maintenance fees exceeds the permit fees that would have typically been collected. The Oakwood School has maintained a positive working relationship with the center staff for over 5 decades. They've been utilizing the space at North Hollywood on a non-exclusive use or on a non-exclusive basis with a facility use permit, and shall continue to do so throughout the term of this proposed agreement. On behalf of the Department of Recreation and Parks, I would like to thank the Oakwood School for their generous donation. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't have questions. I just wanted to hear the item to just say congratulations. As we continue to move into really strained budgetary environment, these types of public-private partnerships where a community leader, a school wants to stand up to improve a park and activate that park, I just think it is it's exceptional. I know they're always not easy to do to get to this point, but I just wanted to say kudos to the partnership department, and hopefully we can bring more of these public-private partnerships to bear so that we can improve our parks, activate our parks, and really have community and civic engagement. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And that definitely is our plan moving forward, is to continue this.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next item is 014. Veronica?
Good morning. I'm Veronica Polanco, the Chief Innovation Officer of PlayLA. PlayLA is structured as a program to overcome barriers in participation to youth sports across Los Angeles. We are aiming to achieve equity in youth sports and increase access to opportunities to all Angelina youth, especially those coming from economically disadvantaged communities and anyone with a physical disability as well. Today, we are requesting the approval of an additional $4,454,559 for the fiscal year 23-24 project plan, bringing the total to $23,252,799. There were no programmatic changes to the plan. The increase in cost is simply due to reaching 39% greater enrollment than we originally projected. So we had more kids, obviously cost more with instruction and equipment. And so that's the request for today. The staff recommends the approval of the revised project plan and authorizing staff to receive the funding allocated by the LA 28 committee for the 28 Olympic Games, Paralympic Games, of an additional $4,454,559.
Thank you. I just had a quick question. And congratulations. I mean, the increase in participation, that is the whole purpose of the program. So well done on that. I was curious as to what you think are driving the increase in participation, and is there particular rec centers that we're seeing? Because I didn't see that in the report. I just saw a whole number, in the report in terms of, and I can't remember what the number was.
The main increase is actually coming from our pre-qualified sites.
Yeah, they were, but thank you. It was the pre-qualified sites, but do we know which pre-qualified sites? Do we know a geographic area where we're seeing the greatest increase in participation?
We can get that information. The other increase that came from, it was 26% increase for non-pre-qualified sites, and that was due to the waiver system that we embedded within the online registration. So we can factor those in as well.
Yeah, but I'm curious at the site level. If you can get back to us on that, that would be really helpful.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on this item?
It says that we'll get an annual project plan. When will we expect that?
The 23-24 has already been approved. This is the first time we actually went over budget. And so there wasn't a clear process as to how we make sure the controller knows and does all the steps for us to receive the funding, because we do a reconciliation at the end of each fiscal year. So we can share the original with you as well.
I meant like...
Can I add? Yeah, just so we come to the board like essentially... annually in advance of the next project plan year. So the board's already approved 24-25 project plan. 25-26 will come to the board shortly. And then from the board, it then goes to ad hoc committee and then council.
And our ad hoc committee hasn't met. So you have approved the 24-25 revised project plan, but that's, we're waiting for the Olympic ad hoc committee to meet to kind of push that through as well.
So I know we met a couple of months ago on this and wanted to see that progress.
Yeah, we're hoping to complete the 25-26, like we're just going through the approval process. So we hope to be before you with that one as well.
And I think maybe at that time, what we can do is provide a little diagram, because we have different project plans moving through different approval processes simultaneously. So maybe we can just show, here's the plan for this fiscal year, where it's at in the process. And then like this was a revision to a concluded project plan year, because we really do want to think longitudinally how we're trending through 2028 and then beyond.
And Veronica, just going back to my question, you did say that the removing of the waivers increased the non-qualified sites. Did you have insight in terms of the qualified sites, what was driving the increase in demand?
We would have to do the analysis of which ones increased the most, and then we can look at those efforts.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, is it marketing? Is it people coming back from COVID? Is it the programming that's being offered? So just if you can get back to us on those details, that would be helpful.
Copy.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I mean, the only question I have is, when will we, like, not only the sites, but when will we get it? Normally you come in, you give us a report of demographics, because with the increase, I could imagine, want to make sure we're still on target in terms of the gaps, the equity gaps, gender, Kimberly, you know, so it's amazing that these numbers have gone up, especially since the pandemic, but in particular, just want to see that, you know, and any work we have to do close the gaps.
Vice President Sanchez, we'll bring that update at our next board meeting.
Okay.
As a general manager update.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Veronica. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And then our last board item is item 18.
Good morning, Commissioner, Executive Staff, and Member of the Public. Kai Wong, Finance Division, reporting on Board Report 25-018. Reckon Park is seeking to retroactively approve to apply and submit a revised Prop K 11 cycle application to acquire the El Sereno property. Let me give you a little background and context. The original application for the Prop K 11 cycle happened last year. Application was due at the beginning of last year in January of 2024. So at the time, the funding availability was identified as $743,000. So we have put in an application for five property that is that we are currently leasing from Caltrans and that we wish to purchase with this application cycle. In this cycle, Prop K Engineering Group has opened the Prop K 11 cycle. They only given us 2 weeks to apply. This is the reason why we are going before the board to seek to actually get the approval to apply and submit. But it's different from the first application to the revised application is we have increased from buying from five property from Caltrans to 13 property from Caltrans. The funding source availability for this reopened Prop K 11 cycle is $2.6 million. So we have not, think we will have lost the opportunity to apply. This concludes my report. Are there any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Kai. That was my question. You've answered that in your presentation. So we were seizing the opportunity. Thank you. Yeah, great work. Thank you. Okay, so that concludes our board reports. And with that, I'd like to request a motion for approval of board report 005. 012, 014, and 018. Do I have a motion to approve these items?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. I have a motion and a second. Takesha, can you call the vote, please?
Yes. Madam President, we have a motion and a second to approve the reports that was just presented. 25-005, 25-012, 25-014, and 25-018. Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hutton, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Cimarron, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. And thanks to the staff. Those were really good reports. Next item on the agenda, is there any call for neighborhood council comments?
Madam President, I have not received any such requests.
Okay. The task force chairs, are there any verbal reports or updates?
The facility and maintenance task force will be meeting after this meeting and we'll be discussing the park needs assessment project update.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Okay. Are there any comments from the commissioners on future agenda items within the board's jurisdiction or report backs for the general manager? I'll start with one note just to, for the public record, the Play LA report back on the number increases per park site and by demographics to the extent we have that information. Are there any other report backs? Anything else from the commissioners? Fantastic. With that, that concludes this commission meeting. Our next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, February 20th, 9 a.m. We're going back to Commissioner Sanchez's hood, El Sereno Recreation Center, 4721 Kalmuth Street, 90032. The meeting is now adjourned. Be safe in the rain and enjoy the rest of the week.